Our foreign policy is a complete and total disaster. No vision, no purpose, no direction, no strategy.
Is that too simple? Does that constitute an actual policy? That's Donald Trump speaking at the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday during his America First speech, intended to lay out details of his foreign policy. The total disaster, he claims, is the Obama-Clinton foreign policy he would replace with details he presented yesterday in an event intended to make Trump look more presidential. Presidential to whom? Someone who votes for Donald Trump would say he's presidential, but in this country, the president has to be accepted and acknowledged by even the people who don't vote for him. And most important of all, members of the uniformed armed forces need to accept a commander-in-chief Trump. Mike Braney there.
Hi, John. Good morning.
Welcome. And based on what you've heard from Donald Trump, would the existing generals at the Pentagon accept him as commander-in-chief to carry out some of the goals he's been talking about as his foreign policy?
Well, if you take the man at his word, I think, and you listen to his statements on the trail, he set himself up, if he's elected, to trigger what I think is probably going to be the largest civil military crisis since probably the American Civil War. On the trail, he's out there talking about issuing clearly illegal orders. Things like targeting families, murdering civilians on purpose, torture for torture's sake. He says, even if it doesn't work, let's do it anyway. He says the Geneva Convention makes American soldiers afraid to fight. So he's talking about, as a presidential candidate, issuing clearly illegal orders that I think our senior military leaders would be very unlikely to follow. That's a crisis we haven't had in a long time.
Well, Mike is a former Army officer who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's currently CEO of the Truman National Security Project and is speaking to us from Denver. I mean, does that constitute a grumbling, or would we really be talking about some kind of coup where the generals would just say no to broad strokes of policy? And I want to go through some of the speech with you, but are we talking coup here?
Well, John, I think coup's a pretty strong word, but I think it would trigger a major crisis inside not just the military, but the entire national security apparatus, including the intelligence community. But in the case of the military, I mean, everybody from, you know, the highest ranking general or admiral down to the lowest ranking enlisted service member, every soldier, sailor, airman, or marine swears to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that creates two realities. The Constitution specifies that the president of the United States, an elected civilian, is the commander in chief. So the Constitution establishes civilian control of the military, which is an incredibly important principle to the U.S. military. We take it incredibly seriously. So that word coup is a very scary word in that context.
All right. But well, I deliberately used it, and I want you to get all your points in. But let's hear some of the things that Trump said here and see how much of it you suspect uniformed military would be willing to swallow or go along with. Here is Donald Trump saying something that I think actually most Americans would go along with.
Building up our military to provide a strong defense for Europe and Asia. The countries we are defending must pay for the cost of this defense. And if not, the U.S. must be prepared to let these countries defend themselves. We have no choice.
Turning the Pentagon into a kind of fee-for-service operation, I think a lot of Americans would say, that sounds fine. What do you think?
I think it's an incredibly dangerous and naive idea. He thinks we're suckers for providing for the defense of our allies who don't have the size of military and economy that we do. The problem with that is kind of twofold. It's very hard to say that you're going to do right by America's allies and then ask them to pay protection money. More importantly, it's a very naive view of how wars are prevented. We've tried balance of power, great power politics in the world. We've tried in the past, in the first half of the 20th century, in the 19th century, to say we're going to have the great powers in different areas of the world defend themselves, provide for their own security. And what you get in a situation like that is a rapidly changing network of alliances, great distrust, and we've had the two most destructive wars in human history.
Mm. All right. So it's a fundamental
misunderstanding of why our allies matter.
So that point doesn't learn the lessons of the 20th century. Here is Donald Trump speaking about ISIS. This is his message for ISIS.
And then there's ISIS. I have a simple message for them. Their days are numbered. I won't tell them where, and I won't tell them how. We must, as a nation, be more unpredictable. We are totally predictable. We tell everything. We're sending troops, we tell them. We're sending something else, we have a news conference. We have to be unpredictable. And we have to be unpredictable starting now.
So, Mike Breen, a surprise attack that would make ISIS disappear. Can you imagine what that is and what sort of order would come to the Pentagon to carry something like that out?
This is a candidate who's refused to rule out using nuclear weapons against ISIS, which is complete military and moral nonsense. When he talks about unpredictability—
But wait a second. Wait a second. Wait a second. Moral nonsense. He's the commander-in-chief. He's got the nukes. He tells you to drop them. You drop them.
This is the other point about the Constitution, and this is really the catch-22 that Trump threatens to place our senior military leaders in. The Constitution is a legal document. It's the bedrock document of our entire legal system. So we have a military that's as committed to rule of law, more committed, in fact, than they are to loyalty to a single leader. So if that order comes to the commander of Central Command, deploy tactical nuclear weapons against ISIS, and that commander knows that the civilian casualties will be appalling, but not only that he threatens nuclear escalation with every nuclear-powered region, you know, power in the region. He's risking global nuclear war by deploying those weapons. Or if the order comes, hunt down and kill the families of ISIS leaders, kill their kids.
Well, let's just keep it
that's
on nukes
for a
second.
That's an order he's talked about giving.
But Mike, it doesn't say anything in the Constitution about civilian casualties or escalating nuclear war. It only says you obey the civilian commander in chief. So you got
to. It also says Congress has the power to make law. I mean, there's a large body of U.S. law, military and civilian, that tells us you can't go murder kids, whether you're wearing a uniform or not.
But there's also
international treaties and agreements.
There were some kids
has the power to ratify.
There were kids in Hiroshima.
Obviously in war, and Hiroshima is an appalling example of that, in warfare, if you're going after a military target, there are times in which civilians will be killed. And there's a whole body of law that's acceptable and when it's not and at what level. The U.S. military has spent a tremendous amount of time and effort working through legal checks but also through more and more precise weapon systems, smaller and smaller bombs and a whole host of other things to minimize those casualties. That's not just because it's a nice thing to do. It's because it's the strategically smart thing to do.
Let's talk about China, since China is a really big deal and was a big component of the speech yesterday.
China respects strength. And by letting them take advantage of us economically, which they are doing like never before, we have lost all of their respect. A strong and smart America is an America that will find a better friend in China, better than we have right now. Look at what China is doing in the South China Sea. They're not supposed to be doing it. No respect for this country or this president.
What do you think?
I think, again, I keep coming back to this, but it's a very simplistic, naive view of the way this works. The U.S. military currently is doing a lot to both maintain freedom of the seas, so sailing and flying near some of these settlements that the Chinese are building, these islands, at the same time trying to avoid an accidental conflict with China. Because when you put military forces in close proximity to each other, you want to make sure nobody accidentally runs into each other or starts shooting at each other. It's a dangerous situation. So these things have to be managed. Projecting strength is one thing. Projecting strength unpredictably as the most powerful military in the world is pretty dangerous. If you're trying to guarantee a stable global security environment, the worst thing you want to do is be erratic. You know, if you saw a police officer down a fifth of Jack Daniels and then, you know, tie himself to his car, duct tape his foot to the gas pedal and then go on the road. Yeah, that guy's unpredictable, but he's not guaranteeing anybody's security.
You're talking about a situation where the day after Election Day, there are people at the Pentagon going over having a lunch to talk about what they're going to do to maybe take over, right?
Nobody's talking about taking over from the Pentagon.
What are we going to do? What are we going to do when we have to say no?
Do we resign? Do we simply refuse the order? What do we do?
That's going to happen.
There's a great deal of fear. Yeah.
That's
already happening. People are already having these conversations. What happens if everybody who's unwilling to – I mean, you cited the My Lai massacre. I mean, Donald Trump, when he talks about killing the families, he's talking about ordering the My Lai massacre. That's not a war crime anymore. That's not somebody disobeying orders. That's a president saying, go do that. So if everybody in the military who doesn't want to do that, who didn't sign up to be that but signed up for, you know, to support and defend the United States of America, we don't do that kind of thing. If they all quit, if they all resign in protest, who's left in the military? These are the kind of conversations that our senior leaders and my friends who are, you know, mid-level officers are having. That's deeply troubling.
Mike Breen is CEO of the Truman National Security Project. He's a former Army officer who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. We'll talk to you again before November, all right?
Looking forward to it, John. Thanks.